Welcome to episode number 2 of the 3-Peat Podcast. I'm Alex Castle alongside with
Steven Benazzo
and Josh Romowitz.
We got another great show for you lined up today. We'll be diving into the previous draft and who won and lost and discussing the overall picks. But first, we got to talk about last night's episode of The Last Dance. Another great 2 episodes. As we did last show, we really, dove deep and analyzed a lot, which I think gave you guys, the viewers, a good sense of the show. But on this show, I want to get a little more specific with you guys. So the first point I want to talk about is Dennis Rodman. You know, as we know, Rodman was a huge piece to that team, not only defensively, but just helping out Jordan when Pippen was not there. But Rodman also had some struggles coming up, as we saw in the documentary. He was homeless for 2 years during his life. He took up basketball at that point when things got rough. Basketball kind of, helped him figure things out. But it seemed even with Detroit, he was still lost. And when he got traded to San Antonio, we saw that, he kind of started to live life how he wanted, whether it was the way he dressed or he acted. So my question for you guys is, a player like Dennis Rodman, who had so much controversy around him, but Krause was still willing to sign him. Do you see a player with the same amount of controversy getting signed in today's world?
No, not at all. This timing on this today's age of basketball, you don't have to be perfect. And, there's already a lot of personalities. But you look like a guy like Draymond Green. He is not even – he just has some on-field or on-the-court actions that he does that a lot of people don't like. Yes, he's still a member of the Warriors, but I feel like a lot of teams won't bring him in because he could be a headache in the locker room or a headache on the court. A lot of ejections. Same thing with Boogie Cousins. Granted, he still gets opportunities because he's that good. But it's tough. But like a guy like Dennis Rodman, when he just out of random wants to go and on a vacation, and then especially Vegas. And as we saw, Michael Jordan said, "You're not going to get him back in 48 hours," and they didn't. So that definitely would not probably be acceptable now. A lot of coaches wouldn't want to deal with that. I'm surprised that the Bulls even put that during the 90s and during that dynasty. So I personally don't think that a character like Rodman would be on a team and maybe even succeed in today's game.
Yeah, I agree with you, Steve. I don't think a guy like Rodman with his character, attitude, personality even, would get a shot in the NBA or any professional league. Yeah, you mentioned Vegas, his 48-hour vacation that he asked his coach, Phil Jackson, for. I just don't see that being acceptable in the NBA. If one of the players, say, like you mentioned Draymond or Boogie Cousins or even like J.R. Smith, they'd probably be cut right away regardless of their skill or not. So I just find it like that's a huge difference in the NBA sports back then in the 90s than we're living in today. And I think it also has to go with the culture and the way the league is going. Like, the league is pretty soft now compared to back then.
And, Josh, you bring up a good point with this league being soft. And, it may not be the players themselves being soft, but even just the referees. Like, when Jordan and the Bulls went up against the Bad Boys of Detroit, they were just manhandling the Bulls, throwing Jordan down almost – every play, the center for the Detroit, Bill Laimbeer, he was just armed, hooked in with Jordan's arm or whoever was down in the paint, and he didn't care, and the refs didn't seem to care, which is kind of shocking. Now, that would definitely be a foul before they even probably touch each other. The refs will blow the whistle, and or it could be a flagrant now. In the league itself, too, barely anyone drives. Yeah, you still get your you know, you still have the dunks and layups, and yes, there is still scoring going on in the paint. But now, just look at the Warriors. They can all shoot threes. The starting five, especially when Kevin Durant was on the roster, you had Steph, Clay, KD, Draymond, and
Iguodala,
or even other centers that were on there. They could all shoot the three. So a lot of the game now is just, let me get a good shot. And when they were not strong enough, Jordan and them went to the gym to work out, like lifting weights. Now a lot of people just go back to the court or gym to shoot hoops to perfect their shot. So that's why, you know, you get these two different styles of the game, and, you know, one's soft and one is tough.
Yeah, you mentioned the Jordan rule, which I found very fascinating in the podcast, in the episode. I don't know if you guys saw that, but you said the Bad Boy Pistons, whenever Jordan got in the paint or was driving, they would foul him to make sure he did not take flight and would not embarrass someone. They would much rather let Jordan win on the free throw line than him posterizing someone. So what are your thoughts on that, guys?
I mean, well, just going back to what you guys were touching upon earlier with the physicality and the difference between the styles today, I think that's clearly apparent, as you guys have touched upon in the documentary with the Jordan rule. And, you know, the fact that that Pistons team knew that going into every game that things were just going to get physical. And I just don't think that's a mentality that you see today. Like Steve mentioned, you know, guys are, you know, I feel like ever since Curry got into the league, he made the three-point ball like this part of basketball that everyone needs to jump on. Everyone needs to be a shooter. And I think guys are less aggressive because of that. And does it take away from the game? I don't know. You know, I think that the physicality definitely brought an element to the game that people like, that it got more people, you know, invested. But I still think today it's a great game. I definitely also think, like you guys have mentioned, you know, with times, things have changed. I mean, you know, there's no way that, you know, Silver would let LeBron get roughed up like that in the game. Absolutely not, because, you know, LeBron is the face of the NBA. And, you know, I just feel like the league would take a lot of heat for that.
I like your point with that, Castle. You know, you got to protect a guy like LeBron. But also, too, when watching on TV as a fan, you know, threes are cool, you know, especially if they're deep and they just, you know, cash them, or like a buzzer beater. But who doesn't love physicality? You know, that's why everyone loves watching the NFL, the constant, you know, physical action going on, or an MLB when there's those exciting plays when people are sliding or, you know, diving in at home, or hockey, you know, that's a physical sport. So in basketball, when you have guys in the paint or guys, you know, like Jordan or LeBron jumping over guys and dunking over everyone, you know, so, and then when you see guys, you know, like, you don't want to see guys get hurt, but when you see guys like kind of flying, whether on the ground or whoever, you know, you're in tune to it. But when people are just, you know, sitting in the corner and just taking a three, still staying there, taking another three, it gets old after a while. A lot of these kids now are getting accustomed to that. But for us, we're kind of in the middle, because when we were younger, it was still kind of that old, you know, traditional way, like Shaq. Just feed Shaq the ball in the paint, and he's, you know, him or Yao are going to just muscle you up and put it in. But then now, as we get older, we're getting used to guys like Steph or Clay, you know, these sharpshooters that just all they want to do is shoot, whether because, you know, they have a good shot and they know that their game is better by shooting rather than driving. But from a fan's perspective, you know, you like a little physicality, you like that little tension, which usually happens right in the paint.
I have a question for you guys. So yeah, obviously we were talking about Steph and Clay and all those shooters. Do you think that gives not an excuse, but I'm going to use that word excuse for people growing up who are playing basketball, who are not the most physical guys, to develop their shot, to find a way to like eventually become players of the game, either professionally or collegiately?
Oh, absolutely. I think, you know, I think the long shot has been so glorified with Steph and with Clay that it absolutely gives kids hope to try to pursue, you know, their careers further. Because think about it, if you're a kid that's on the smaller side, who doesn't have the best build, but you've got skill dribbling the ball, you've got skill shooting, you've got a good understanding of the game, then absolutely, everyone's got to look up to someone and model themselves after someone. So to answer your question, Josh, yes, I do think that guys like Clay and Steph are role models for kids who want to play more like them and want to play that style.
And Castle, to add on to you, I'm the perfect example. I'm 5'6". You know, I'm not strong or muscular at all. So for me, yeah, I rely on a shot, because I know if I drive to the paint, I'm either just going to get bodied out of the paint or I'm going to get blocked. I'm going to get stuffed at the rim, you know? And I'm not going to get stuffed by the rim because I can't even touch the rim, but I'm going to get stuffed by someone who's waiting there. I just get mad when I see some of these athletic kids that are over 6 feet tall. They have a good build to them, and they're obviously very athletic. They can jump high. And yet they are just sitting behind the arc, just wanting to shoot, you know? Listen, if you don't always have to stay in the paint, or if it's a pickup game, you know, you want to shoot a little bit, I get it. But go to the paint, you know, like throw some dunks down, do some cool layups, try to body, like really see how like tough you are and like aggressive you can be. So it's not all just like people like me, just, you know, hey, I'm open, give me the ball, you know? Because then what's the point if everyone's just open in the corner? And that's not what basketball is. You know, basketball is usually fast paced back and forth. So that's why I wish if I had, you know, if I was a lot taller, I'd be going to the paint almost every time. So that's just my opinion though.
Josh, what do you think? You know, you're someone who played basketball in high school, still plays basketball today. You know, you've experienced playing with a lot of different players. You've even worked on your own game. How do you see it?
So I like what Steve said. Growing up throughout middle school, high school, when I was playing on school teams, I was usually the shortest guy on my team. I'm always the point guard. I always had to shoot from my waist because I didn't even have enough power to shoot like from my head. So I totally get where you're coming from, Steve. Like, I got very frustrated when I saw my big man step out and hit a three instead of like going down low. Cause if I was a foot taller at that time, I would be down low trying to body my defender. And cause a shot from 5 feet away is a lot easier to make than a 20-foot shot. But at the same time, like, there is something very special about like nailing a three that I think Steve said earlier. Like, you look at Damian Lillard when he hit his step back three against Paul George last year in the playoffs in game seven. That was so
great
special.
Game.
And
great
that
game.
Was one of the greatest shots I've ever seen. So there is something very special about the three, and I love the three-pointer, and I hope it never dies. But at the same time, we got to find that balance. We're working down low in the paint. We got to bring that back because it brings back more excitement in the game.
I do agree. So we've covered a lot with this week's two episodes. Great episodes. Next week, I believe one of the episodes is the Kobe edition, which I know that there will be a lot to talk about that, you know, with the timing and everything. It'll be very interesting to see the relationship between the two of them and even get more insight to the type of player that Kobe Bryant was. Now it's time to dive in to the topic that we've been waiting for, the draft. First draft that was done remotely, as we saw, Roger Goodell announced all of the picks from his basement, All the executives, the players, everything was remote. Now, before we get into the real details, the real depth of everything, we'll all go around the horn and share our thoughts. I want to hear what you guys thought, how your respective teams did. So, Josh, how your Jets did, and Steve, how your Bears did.
So, as a Jet fan, I am very optimistic about our future and what the season will hold. I give Joe Douglas and Adam Gase and everyone else who helped the draft of these guys major credit and major props because they did a very good job. I think if they aren't, they were a top three team winning the draft. I think the Cowboys and then maybe the Jets won the draft with picking up guys like Mekhi Becton, sealing up that that edge for Lev Bell, a playmaker in Denzel Mims, picking up Bryce Hall in the fifth round. Like, it's just insane what we got. We had a bunch of steals. Our last five picks were all captains at some point in their collegiate career. So they were all leaders. And that'll definitely help our locker room when you bring in young guys who were leaders. They'll mold in very well with the culture that the Jets are building.
For me, for the Bears, I've been reading a lot of analysts and or, you know, sites is, you know, grade after the draft. And the Bears are getting bad grades. And listen, coming in, they only had a very limited amount of picks. They had 2 second-round picks. They had a fourth-round comp pick that they then traded for Nick Foles a month ago. So they had 2 second-round picks and then not a pick until the fifth round and then a couple sixes and sevens. So before the draft, you got to think, well, really, you're only getting two probably key guys, and the rest are just going to be guys that they feel they can maybe develop into young, you know, good players or depth players or guys that maybe could take the next step. So the Cole Kmet pick at 43, a lot of people, you know, are why are they taking another tight end? They already got, you know, 10, and they just signed washed up Jimmy Graham to that awful contract, even though it's only 2 years and they can opt out after the first year. We need a tight end because our tight ends, we didn't have any tight ends last year. You know, point blank, I mean, we had a few guys, but none of them could take that tight end one spot. You know, Trey Burton was just not healthy. You know, he was really good in 2018, but he just was not healthy, and he was a liability on the field. He just wasn't producing. And then guys like J.P. Holt, Ben Broniker, Jesper Horsted, you know, they've shown flashes here and there, but none of them said, listen, I could be your starting tight end. In an offense like Matt Nagy's, that's very similar to the Chiefs and Eagles, you see how important the tight ends are in that scheme. Look at Travis Kelce. He's one of the best tight ends in the league and how much the Chiefs use him. And I don't think Pat Mahomes would be as successful without a guy like Travis Kelce. Or same with Carson Wentz in Philadelphia with Zach Ertz. He targets Zach Ertz more than any one of his receivers. Granted, they didn't have the best receivers, but still. So for everyone to say Cole Kmet was an awful pick is like, hold on. And the better part of that is he's a hometown kid. He grew up a Bears fan. This was a dream come true for him. You know he's going to go all out. I mean, all these guys are going to go all out to prove themselves. But, you know, he's going to have an early opportunity. He's going to get a lot of, you know, touches, hopefully. And he is that type of kid who's going to work his tail off. And so I'm excited about it. But I really like pick number 50, Jalen Johnson, corner from Utah. You know, it wasn't the steal of the draft, but I do consider it a steal. Many analysts had him, you know, ranked as one of the top corners and one of the top players in this draft. But he kind of fell because of past shoulder injuries. You know, Ryan Pace, the general manager for the Bears, did his research, talked to the coaches, and it doesn't seem like an issue. But this guy was a playmaker at Utah. He was a lockdown corner. I mean, he had over 1,000 defensive snaps and only allowed like 3 total touchdowns. Like that's pretty good. And when guys like Damon Arnett go, and listen, Damon Arnett is good, but I don't think he, you know, I think Jalen Johnson's a lot better. So, and if you pair him with opposite Kyle Fuller, that's a pretty good secondary, you know, corner tandem you have with Eddie Jackson in the back. So I really like that pick. And then some of the other picks they picked in the fifth, sixth round, you know, guys like Darnell Mooney, receiver, he's a speedy guy. That's what the Bears need. We already have some big body receivers like Allen Robinson and Javon Wims. Anthony Miller is not as big, but he's strong, but he's not fast. So Mooney brings that speed. And then you got a guy like Travis Gibson, who's another D-end, who, you know, it's you always have good pass rushers and good rotational guys. So Mack and Robert Quinn are not constantly tired. And I also love, this wasn't a draft pick, but the undrafted signing of Khalil Mack's little brother, Ladarius Mack, a.k.a. Lee Mack. So if he, listen, he doesn't have to turn into Khalil, but if he's something around there, watch out, fellas. Because the Chicago return of the Max, but
That's very interesting. I didn't know about that about Max's brother. Sounds like the Bears they didn't have any first rounders, but they still were able to make do. Josh, you know I hate admitting this, but I think the Jets did do a very well job drafting. I think Becton is going to be huge for that offensive line. Sounds like the Jets definitely did get some steals. Wish I could say the same about my Giants, unfortunately, the big blue wrecking crew. We did get Thomas with the fourth overall pick. Now, look, you guys know, you know, I told you last show I was going to go off if we didn't get Simmons, and I know you all wanted the rant. The rant's not coming, and here's why. It wasn't the best pick, but it was a safe pick. You know, this guy was a unanimous All-American, arguably a top three linemen in the draft. He was, you know, his score at the combine reflected that he's going to be a first year starter, which is all great. You know, now you got him on the left with Will Hernandez. You got a brick wall for Jones on his blind side. We're going to move Solder to right tackle. We're definitely making the right moves. But my favorite pick had to be McKinney. Arguably the best safety coming out of Alabama, best safety in the draft. Saban spoke very highly with him. Having him and a young Peppers deep in the backfield is going to make our passing game a lot easier. And I'll get more into that in a little bit. But going to make it a lot easier. As the picks progressed, I mean, we picked up some more linemen, which is good. I mean, I saw one post that the Giants Instagram made that we drafted 950 pounds worth of linemen, which is crazy to think about. You know, crazy to think about. I like that. We got another D-back, the D-back out of UCLA. He's a little undersized. He's 5'10", but I think he can bring a lot to the table. We drafted a crap load of linebackers, which, okay. My thing is, if you were going to do that to begin with, why not draft Simmons at 4 and wait to get the lineman later? But I'm not, you know, I'm not Gettleman. I'm not a Giants exec. Overall, though, I think that we definitely made the right steps with drafting. I definitely think we're going to get Jones and Barkley more protection now. We beefed up the secondary a little bit, which I think is going to help. I'm optimistic about this season. So speaking of going into, you know, next season and how other teams did, teams that won. I mean, you know, a lot of teams did well in this draft. But my first winner, Josh, you touched upon it earlier, is the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, the fact that they got Lamb at the 17th pick, Jerry Jones drafting alone on his $250 million yacht. Whatever, yeah, it was.
He was million.
Million-dollar yacht? Crazy. But he had success. I mean, Lamb, arguably one of the best receivers in the draft. You know, the fact that he was able to drop to Dallas, that's huge, because now you got Prescott, who's going to be returning probably under a nice size contract, arguably one of the three best running backs in the league with Elliott. And then you got Cooper, and now you got Lamb on the outside, which makes them, I hate to say this, but in my opinion, probably the best team in that division going into the 2020 season. So that's my pick for the winner. I'd also give it to the Jets too. I think they did a great job. Even though it was projected, I also got to give, not calling them a winner, but I give Washington a good job choosing Chase Young. You know, they've had some solid ends. They've had Kerrigan in the past, and I know they've worked with a lot of guys defensively. You know, Young's a hometown kid, so I think he'll bring a lot more energy and spirit. But, yeah, you know, there were teams here and there, but my hands-down winner had to be Dallas.
For me, I'm torn between the Baltimore Ravens and the Indianapolis Colts. So first I'll talk about the Ravens for a little bit, and then I'll go to the Colts. So the Ravens, Patrick Queen fell to them. I mean, Patrick Queen, to me, was one of the best defensive players in this draft, and especially linebacker. And that was a need for the Ravens since they lost C.J. Mosley last year in free agency to Josh's Jets. And it wasn't like he was a decent – I mean, he was a star for LSU on that defense. So then he fell. Then they got J.K. Dobbins in the second round. And Dobbins was arguably one of the best running backs in this class. I think he was number two. So now you pair him with Mark Ingram and Lamar Jackson. You know, they like to run the ball too. I mean, and then they got a couple other – they got another linebacker, Malik Harrison from Ohio State, who I was highly – who I thought is a very good player and I'm highly of. So I thought they got a lot of day one contributors right off the bat, and they didn't even have to trade down or trade up. They just kind of stayed where they were, and these guys just fell to them. Now, for the Colts, I think personally, now I'm talking about it, I think the Colts, to me, did have the best draft. You know, you can argue, well, they didn't have a first-round pick, but they traded it for DeForest Buckner, who is one of the best defensive linemen in the league right now, and he's still young. So now you got, you know, your leader for your defensive line, and then you take Michael Pittman, who is one of the best receivers in this class, second round. You pair him with T.Y. Hilton. T.Y. Hilton is, you know, kind of smaller, but he's very fast, really good hands. But Michael Pittman is that bigger guy who's also got some speed, but he can really catch the ball. And then my favorite guy, they got Jonathan Taylor out of Wisconsin, who I thought was the best running back. I don't know why other people did not feel the same. I mean, what he did in college was just unbelievable. I mean, he over 6,000 yards in three seasons. He would have broke the record for the most amount of rushing yards in FBS history if he stayed for senior year. So they got him, and, you know, they sure run the ball a lot with they had guys like Marlon Mack or Nyheim Hines, but Nyheim Hines is just not as – he's versatile, but he's not like a true running back as I thought he was coming in. I think he almost is better as a slot receiver. Then Marlon Mack, he's coming in on his last year of his deal. He had a broken hand last year, you know, but a guy like Jonathan Taylor, I mean, knock on wood, he's been pretty injury free, you know, but he could sure break tackles. He's got that good balance, good vision, great speed, especially when he gets to, you know, second half of the field. And he improved a lot more with catching the ball. You know, that was a big concern. But when he's running behind a guy like Quentin Nelson, you better watch out. And I think they also got Julian Blackman, right, from safety from Utah. And he is – I was pretty high on him too. At safety, he was really good, and he was actually teammates with the Bears guy, Jalen Johnson. And that Utah secondary was pretty locked down. And so for the Colts to add him with Malik Hooker, I know I saw rumors that Hooker could be moved, but they kept him for now. So if you compare those two guys together, I mean, I think the Colts got a lot of starters too in what they got in free agency. I think they're a team to watch out for. So I think the draft, they definitely did well for the draft.
So I was actually going to say the Ravens, Steve. So that's funny that you mentioned that. But one team that – there are two teams that I also felt did really well that no one has mentioned, one being the Denver Broncos. Yeah, they got Jerry Jeudy. But like I said last week, they also got KJ Hamler. So you pair a very young Drew Lock. They signed Melvin Gordon. They still have Philip Lindsay. You pair him with Courtland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and KJ Hamler now. And then you look at their defense. You're getting Bradley Chubb back from their season-ending injury last year. They still have Von Miller. That's going to be a scary team next year. Another team that I really like was the Vegas Raiders. I was a little unsure about Ruggs being the first receiver taken, but it makes sense. This dude is being compared to Tyreek Hill. He had a 4.27 40, which is just ridiculous. Also, I was a huge fan of the Damon Arnette pick. He's going to be a lockdown corner out of Ohio State. And then they got other receivers to help out either Mariota or Derek Carr, whoever wins out their quarterback competition.
The Raiders, I did like the Ruggs pick was good, but
that was huge for them.
For me, though, they took so many receivers. Just like, you know, I mean, I guess they got to figure one of them's got to work out. But
well,
I don't know. I thought they were going to go quarterback, to be honest, with one of their. I figured maybe the Damon Arnette pick, they could have went Jordan Love. You know, I knew John Gruden was kind of interested in him, and he was doing a lot of research and watching his tape and talking to him. So I thought possibly that was going to be that pick. Damon Arnette is good. I just don't know if he should have went 19 to them. I was thinking maybe second round somewhere for him. So for him to jump to 19, I don't know. I was a little iffy on that pick.
I don't know. He was a good corner for Ohio State, but also, like you said, they took a lot of receivers, but you look at who they took. Yeah. Okay. They have in three rounds, they took three receivers. Okay. Lynn Bowden Jr. is a flex guy. He's not a receiver. He played a lot of running back. He's a special teams guy. Okay, so you pair Ruggs, they have Hunter Renfro. What other receivers do they have? So that makes sense why they also took Bryan Edwards.
It's not like Tyrell Williams.
Do they still have him? Okay, fine.
I believe so.
Yeah, they do still have him.
So I mean, he's good, yeah, and he was a help for Derek Carr, but they lack depth.
Also keep in mind that they utilize Jacobs a lot. Like, so for them, Gruden might have looked at it and said, yeah, sure, I'm going to make it one of my priorities to get either Carr or Mariota some more help offensively. But he also could see Jacobs as being the main guy for that offense. Wait, so I feel like it could have gone either way.
Yeah, and I to your point, last year he was basically – you know, their guy that they always rely to, whether they ran the ball or kind of, you know, dished him out like a little screen or whatever. And he was, you know, he had over 1,000 yards, scrimmage yards. So, but, you know, and as the analysts were saying during the draft, they got Ruggs because the Chiefs have Tyreek Hill. You know, like everyone just wants to be like the Chiefs, especially when you're in right. That same exact division. So, if the Chiefs score one play, you know, Tyreek Hill, deep bomb, well, then the Raiders want to say, hey, listen, we got Henry Ruggs. We can do that too. Deep bomb, they score, you know. So in that division, I doubt there's going to be that much defense. I feel like it's going to be a lot of points back and forth going on. And that's why, like, the Broncos,
GM,
you know, they, like Hamler. Like Josh, you said, you know, KJ Hamler. So Jerry Jeudy, he's underrated going deep too, but his speed won't kill you. It's just his route running. But Hamler's
speed will kill you.
Oh yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. And Hamler's torched good defenses in college football, like Ohio State, who had how many guys selected? Jeff Okuda, Damon Arnette, Malik Harrison. So that division now is just locked and loaded with speed. So I guess also maybe that's why the Raiders did pick Arnette. So Because I'm trying to think who their first corner is. So maybe it is.
They have Eli Apple now that they signed, but Apple hasn't had the best success.
No. So definitely interesting picks, but you can see both point of views, you know, why they took all those offensive guys and why they took Arnett there. Then from our views, why we, you know, why did you do that? So it's a lot goes into it, but at the end of the day, they did make some solid picks.
They did.
But I'm going to continue now. The teams that I don't think had a good draft.
The losers.
And I'm not trying to be biased here, but I'm going to go the Green Bay Packers. Because I'll give the Packers this. I'll give the Packers this. Last year, they had a really good team. You know, Rodgers is still Rodgers. He's one of the best QBs in this league, and he's not going anywhere. Devontae's one of the best receivers in the game. Aaron Jones really took off. That defense, they got a lot better. I mean, they made it to the NFC Championship game. They finished 13-3. All they needed to do was give Rodgers one more weapon on the outside. And what did they do? They chose Jordan Love, the quarterback out of Utah State, who's not even probably ready now. So what are you going to say? You know, he can learn under Rodgers. That's a great quarterback to learn under. Correct. But Rodgers just signed a four-year extension worth $134 million at the end of – or the beginning of last offseason. So now that first year of that contract is going to affect starting this year. You know, and if you're the Packers, are you going to tell Rodgers, oh, yeah, you know, it's probably time to hang it up or trade Rodgers? And there's no way they're going to just release him between the amount of the dead cap hit that they'll face. So to me, I figure, I mean, I know a lot of the receivers went before their pick, but they could either trade it up or you could still have taken a guy like LaVisca or Denzel Mims or T. Higgins or Michael Pittman. They, all those guys were still on the board at that time. And then they proceeded to not add anyone in the second round. And then third round, they added A.J. Dillon, who's not even an elusive back. He's a power back, you know, who really just runs up the middle and uses his own pure strength. So, again, not to be biased, but I thought they whiffed on it. And a lot of other people, you know, agree with me. I don't think there's anyone, and probably not even Aaron Rodgers, who thinks that the Packers had a good draft.
Yeah, I got to agree with you, Steve. Aaron Rodgers is one of my favorite quarterbacks to watch. I think he's a tremendous quarterback. The way that, you know, his footwork, his size, his arm, and he's done a lot of good for Green Bay. And, you know, you would think that they would not even do him the courtesy, but you would think for the sake of the future that they would try to get him another weapon. I mean, sure, Devontae Adams arguably is a top three receiver, but he's, you know, got to need a little more help. And then when you draft another quarterback, that just kind of not only shows how much faith they have in Rodgers, but the faith in how the offense is being run too. You know, you're bringing in a younger quarterback with a different style of play, you know, and that's why another team that I'm also going to give the L to is Philly. Drafting Jalen Hurts? Are you kidding me? Like, you know, sure, Hurts is not ready to start, but at least have the guy on a team where he has time to grow and then get ready. There's no way that Wentz is going to be out in another year or two unless he deals with a dramatic injury. And Wentz also could have used a weapon. Yeah, their next pick was a receiver, who I think will do a pretty good job for them. But still, their first pick, I mean, getting Hurts was just, you know, I really do not understand the logic behind that. Sure, maybe if they want to use Hurts for sneaks to take some pressure off Wentz to make him more the mobile quarterback, but I'd either give it to Green Bay or Philly.
I agree with both of you on those two. There are two other teams that I want to mention One of which is the Carolina Panthers. I say them
drafted
simply,
entire defense.
They were the first team ever to use all 7 draft picks on defense. Okay, it was a need for them. They were allowing 30-something points a game. Okay, but Teddy Bridgewater is their quarterback. Christian McCaffrey is their offense. He is their running back, receiver, whatever they want him to do, he does. They don't have any receivers. They don't have a tight end anymore. Christian McCaffrey could use some help on that O-line. They didn't draft O-line. They didn't draft one receiver. So I was very skeptical by that. They need help on the offense. It can't just be Christian McCaffrey because load management doesn't work. Sure, they have Teddy Bridgewater now, and they don't have Cam Newton, so that might help the quarterback situation. I don't know. But I was not a fan of that pick, of the way they drafted. Derek Brown will be a very good pick. Don't get me wrong. But no offense is very questionable. And another team I want to say is the New England Patriots. I am a little biased on that. But their first pick was a safety. Okay, fills a need. Out of Lenoir Ryan University. I can't tell you where that is. Never heard of it. Out of all the players available, Kyle Duggar out of Lenoir Ryan University. Hey, he might be a stud, and Bill Belichick knows what he's doing. He pulls things out of his ass, and he makes them look good. Okay, great. But it's just very odd and unusual. Also, the fact that they didn't take a quarterback. Like, are they relying on Jarrett Stidham to be the next Brady? I don't know. All I know is he has no help. They don't have Gronk anymore, obviously. They have an old Edelman, and that's it.
You still have Edelman.
Yeah. An old Edelman.
Who we don't even know if he's going to want to work with another quarterback the same – or not work with another quarterback, but the chemistry level will nowhere near be the same as it was with Brady.
Oh, for sure.
After seeing, you know, yeah, his two best friends leave, you know, Gronk retired last year, you know, so he probably missed playing with Gronk. And then, but he still had Brady. And then Brady leaves in free agency to Tampa Bay. And then Gronk comes out of nowhere and says, hey, I want to play again. My body feels good. I got that drive. I want to go to Tampa Bay. You know, so now Edelman's like, who do I have?
I'm all alone.
You know? Yeah, basically. So, yeah, I agree with you. The Patriots, and a lot of people thought the Patriots had a pretty good draft, some of the defensive guys they got. But I wasn't, you know, I thought they should have targeted a tight end, like, and not the Asiasi guy. Thought they should have tried to go after a guy like Kmet or Bryson Hopkins or Harrison Bryan. But they didn't. And even the quarterback, they had so many chances to get Jacob Eason or Jake Fromm.
Jake Fromm, yeah.
I mean, Jake Fromm fell the 5th round. To Buffalo, and Buffalo doesn't even need him, and he's so, like, unless if they are just completely saying, you know what, we're gonna try to sit him out, see what he got. If he sucks, then either we're probably suck and we'll draft Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields, or if another QB prospect comes out of, you know, wherever and is now at a, you know, top pick, who knows. But very shocking there. Very shocking.
I agree. So before we wrap up the show, after we've talked about the winners, we've talked about the losers, I want to hear what you guys think. Any general predictions based off of this draft going into next season?
Jets are making
you guys
the playoffs.
Jets making the playoffs. Very bold statement, Josh. Very, very unbiased, too, as we all know.
No, but if we're making a logical predictions. I don't know. I think CeeDee Lamb will be a very, very good receiver. But I think also Denzel Mims will make all the teams pay for passing up on him. Like he said, he told Joe Douglas and Adam Gase on the phone. He said, all these teams that passed on me, they're going to regret it because I'm going to be their biggest nightmare when they're scouting me. So I could see Denzel Mims playing with a chip on his shoulder.
I will say this. The Arizona Cardinals will make the playoffs. Not the Super Bowl, but they will make the playoffs after having the number one pick just a year ago and after having another top 10 pick this year with the addition of DeAndre Hopkins for practically nothing. Kyler Murray now, a year under his belt, a year with Cliff Kingsbury. You add Isaiah Simmons to that defense, who still has some pieces left. Patrick Peterson, Chandler Jones. Hassan Reddick, some people kind of are willing to give up on him, but I don't think, yes, he may have not reached the potential that, you know, where he was drafted, but he's still not a bad player. So I think they can make some noise. But also I think the San Francisco 49ers will probably it's tough to say if they will be representing the NFC again in the Super Bowl because quarterback plays goes a lot into it. And Jimmy G, who knows if he stays healthy? Not that, you know, he only tore his ACL that one time, but, you know, he was a little inconsistent there, especially, you know, at the end of the Super Bowl. But, you know, he has Deebo Samuel again. He got Brandon Ayuk. They still have some, you know, yep, obviously George Kittle. That line, they got Trent Williams. And that defense is still, you know, they just obviously Javon Kinlaw took over for DeForest Buckner. So they still got a good squad, you know, out west there. So I would definitely say watch out for the Cardinals. The Niners aren't going anywhere. And if I had to choose one for the AFC, this for, you know, whatever, I would have to say the Pittsburgh Steelers will be on the bottom half of the standings. I don't think the Steelers are going to be a good team next year. In reality, they added Chase Claypool, who's not a bad receiver, but I don't know. Who knows with Big Ben? Even when Big Ben's been healthy, I don't think he's going to perform at the level that he once did. The running back situation, I mean, James Conner, it's like, he shows
if he could stay healthy.
I mean, he's good, but there's some games where he just can't get anything going. That defense, you know, they got Minka, they got TJ Watt, Devin Bush, but I don't know. I'm not really sold on any other position on that side. So yeah, don't be surprised if, you know, a team like the Steelers is on the bottom half of standings and could have a high first round pick, and who, you know, probably since Big Ben was drafted to them. So those are my three predictions.
Steve, I'm going to respond to your prediction about the Steelers. I'm going to say that I think the Steelers will be a good team this year. I think I could see them being a wild card team. Keep in mind that, yes, they do have Watt, they have Bush, but they also have Minka Fitzpatrick, who's been incredible for them. I don't know if you guys know this, but they do also have Eric Ebron now at tight end, who we all know has been a major red zone target. And I think by drafting Ebron, it takes pressure off of Juju and Connor. So look, I agree with some of the points you made, Steve. I do think that they still have some struggles to deal with, but don't count them out totally yet. In terms of my predictions, I hate to say this, but I think looking at their division, I think the Jets can make the playoffs this year. I think that, you know, they got a line to back up Darnold and Lev Bell now. They were able to fill Robbie Anderson's spot for receiver. And I just think that Darnold is going to be at a point now where he's a little more developed and he's got the weapons, and I could see it. Now, look, on the other hand, they are the Jets. So, you know, nothing will surprise me if they go downhill. But that's my prediction. In terms of my own guys, the Giants, unfortunately, I don't see them making the playoffs again. They got the help that they need. They got some solid receivers. You know, Darius Slayton, I think he was our steal last year. I think he's going to be an incredible receiver. But I think we still got some work to do there. My final prediction, I'm sure this will be very typical, or not typical, but expected. I do think the Bucs will be going to Super Bowl. I think that they got, you know, they drafted Wirfs. They traded up for him. They got him protecting Brady now. The whole Gronk story. They still got, you know, Godwin and Evans and Howard. I just think the offense is going to be unstoppable. But it will be very interesting to see how they pan out.
I just want to add a comment. I think in the NFC, it'll be the Saints and not the Bucs in the Super Bowl.
Don't count out Drew Brees. A little hoot at, Josh. I see you.
Michael Thomas is the best receiver
in the
league.
The cool thing with the Bucs, though.
Say that again?
The cool thing with the Bucs, though, is if they do make the Super Bowl, they'll be the first team, because Tampa Bay is hosting Super Bowl 55.
That's right.
So, I mean, that would be cool. Obviously, I like to see the Bears, but, you know, if I guess the Bears can make it, I would be okay with the Buccaneers. I mean, heck, the last time they made the Super Bowl, I think I was like only like a year old, so I clearly do not remember it. But the Saints, they could. Now, Josh, I just have one last question for you, though. Back to the AFC East. Tua, the new Dolphin. You think he starts day one? Or you think they still go with Fitzpatrick?
As a Jet fan, I'm hoping it's Josh Rosen starting. If they're smart, it'll be Fitzpatrick and then Tua. Let him rest and heal and learn the system, because there's no way he'll be 100% for the first regular season game. And I'm okay as a Jeff fan losing to Fitzmagic.
I agree. I think that would be the best way for them to transition him. And Rosen's proven that he can't be the guy. So, well, I want to thank all the listeners who took the time to watch this episode of the Three-Peat. Next week, we'll continue to follow all NFL news. We still got some big names who haven't signed with teams yet, like Cam Newton and Jadeveon Clowney. So hopefully we'll have some more news about that. We're also going to start talking about the NBA next week, some rumors surrounding the return of players starting to practice. So we'll keep you updated on that. And that's all we have for this show today. Once again, I want to thank you all for listening to this week's episode of the 3P Podcast. Be on the lookout in our description for our social media. We'll be taking our talents to Instagram and Twitter to keep you guys updated with everything all sports. We got a great show lined up next week with The Last Dance, talking about NBA, continuing to follow the free agents in the NFL. So join us next time. Thank you again, and stay safe.